Chapter 13. Everything went fine for several hours. Nothing even remotely interesting happened. The crawler traveled along its assigned route, with Skippy managing the stealth field and sensor feeds from the crawler, so the alien base saw only what we wanted them to see. The crawler stopped at the appropriate sensor stations for the appropriate length of time, with Skippy making the stealth field radiate images of two Bosphorok knuckleheads getting out at each sensor station and do whatever they were supposed to do. He even made the fake images screw up and waste time like the real crew did, causing the base duty officer to yell at them to get moving. Smythe began to have hope the mission would only suffer one serious setback, when the screw-up fairy woke up from a three-day weekend drunk with a whopping hangover and decided she needed to visit her special kind of magic on someone. The crawler had easily rolled down the hard rock of Mountain Ridge, and the drivers had the throttle wide open to get the vehicle across the floor of the valley below. Skippy had warned them that the shallow valley had a deep accumulation of dust, and it was standard procedure for the Bosphorok assigned to the moon base to speed through the valley like a snowmobile crossing a short length of open water. The dust in the valley was deep enough to come halfway up the sides of the crawler and was not packed down tightly in the low gravity, which was why the interior of the crawler was nearly empty. After the first set of crawlers to travel that route had bogged down and got stuck in the dust, the base commander had ordered all non-essential equipment stripped out of the vehicles to lighten their load. The Star Team's crawler, moving at an alarming speed that jostled the team trying to hold on to anything on the smooth floor of the cabin, shot down the last foothill and splashed across the dust filling the bottom of the valley, wallowing and sliding, but making it across to begin climbing up a ravine on the other side. That ravine led up to a shelf where the crawler would need to turn right to follow the crest of the ridge where the last three sensor stations were located. The trouble, at first, showed itself as nothing more than a slight side-to-side wobble of the treads, requiring a slight adjustment in the steering. Then the crawler began slowing down while climbing the still gentle rise, requiring slightly more throttle. Then more throttle was needed, and the craft began fishtailing and the treads slipped. Finally, no amount of throttle could keep the crawler moving forward because it had stalled. "Sir!" Nunnally shouted from the cockpit while beside him Grudzian tried alternating power from one tread to the other. "We're stuck!" "Cut the throttle," Smythe shouted, standing up and moving toward the cockpit. "We're just churning dust. We'll overwhelm the stealth field. Skippy, what's wrong?"
"Working on it." "I do not understand." This is kind of funny. Well, not funny exactly. Interesting. It appears the problem is mass, or weight. Your team is too heavy, Colonel Smythe. Your team, their suits, and the two stealth generators. They are making the crawler sink into the dust that has slid down the mountainsides here."
"This ravine is also filled with dust?"
"Technically, the word ravine implies the terrain feature was cut by water, as in the term riverine, which, of course—"
"This is not an Oxford geology course."
Smythe's reserve was becoming depleted.
"The crawler is not capable of climbing up this hill?"
"Not with all of you aboard, no. The weight issue is why the Birdbrains stripped out the interiors of their crawlers and also removed the side and roof racks, which, is a fact I knew, and, maybe I should have considered the effect of loading your team and gear aboard. Well, we can all laugh about this some—"
"Beer can."
Smythe bit off each word, signifying the end of his patience.
"If you say that annoying, well, one more time."
"Oh, damn it, now I need a new catchphrase? What a pain—"
Oh, hey, this is an opportunity for me to create a new catchphrase. Cool. How about something like Shazam?"
Smythe balled up his fists, the powered gloves prevented from crushing his own hands by the suit's computer.
"Catchphrase is not the problem. How can we fix this?"
"Well, it would help if you all got lighter." That time, Smythe had to count down from eight before he could speak rationally. How Colonel Bishop dealt with Skippy without the extreme temptation to toss the beer can into a star, Smythe had no idea.
"Assume we cannot ignore the laws of physics, please."
"Oh, in that case, let me think. It looks like you have to get out and walk until the crawler reaches about 80% of the way up the ravine. To be certain, you will also need to remove the bodies of Tweedledum and Tweedledumass, because you will need to have two drivers aboard, and the dead guys are just, you know, dead weight."
"That was funny."
"We can't leave the bodies exposed on the surface."
Nope, you will need to carry them with you. Although, wow, that is a long way to walk. Getting up to where the surface is relatively free of dust is over 9 kilometers, and, now that we know weight is a problem, there are 2 other locations along the crawler's patrol route where it is likely to slip in the dust if your team is aboard. Wow. Damn. You will be walking a really long way. Sorry about that. Shazam? Walking a significant distance was not a problem because of the strain on his team's muscles. It was a problem because there were no spare power packs for the combots. If needed, he could strip power cells from the 2 weapons platforms to keep the chassis carrying the big stealth generator moving. Smythe studied the map projected inside his faceplate. Hey, I don't want to rush you, but, well, you do need to hurry, Skippy chided. The base duty officer is already asking why the crawler is not moving. I am running out of excuses. Also, while we sit here, the treads are sinking deeper into the dust beneath you. Smythe impressed himself by remaining calm. The whole operation had been bollocks from the start. Do you have a suggestion how we can... Frey wrapped her armored gloves on the cabin wall to get the team commander's attention. Colonel Smythe, the dust here is 3 meters thick according to the sensor under this thing. Yes, Smythe did not appreciate the interruption. The depth of the dust will become a problem if the crawler settles to the... No, sir, she shook her head. I think the dust is an opportunity. Can we just bury the dead guys here under the dust? Skippy mused. That is actually a good idea. Eventually, their remaining body heat will cause a detectable heat plume on the surface of the dust, but by that time you will either have taken control of the moon base or failed entirely, so no downside, he chuckled. Good thinking, Frey. That relieves 2 people from carrying additional burdens. We still have the problem of the team and combots making an unplanned march of... Skippy, where could we safely reboard the crawler? That spot is 38 kilometers farther along the route. I am sorry about that. 38 kilometers was too far for the combots to march and still have power for the assault on the moon base. They were designed for short, violent actions, not as mechanical beasts of burden. If they could... Smythe realized with a start there might be another showstopper of a problem. The crater that surrounds the moon base. Dust there will not be a problem for our approach? We can't travel as quickly as the crawler, nor can we let it go on ahead of the team because the crawler is carrying our stealth gear. Dust in the crater is not a problem because the Bosphorok built several roadways from the base to the lip of the crater. No, the only problem is in these mountains. Landslides have caused thick layers of dust to accumulate in what you call ravines. Smythe, Bishop interrupted Smythe's dark thoughts. I don't want to be a backseat driver, but from up here I have a different perspective. The crawler route is 38 kilometers, but straight overland to the reboarding point is only 8 clicks. You can climb over this ridge here. He passed the map to Smythe's suit computer. It's too steep for the crawler, but you should be able to make it, and the combots can climb better than we can. Give me a moment, sir. Smythe held up a finger, though the Flying Dutchman's commander could not see him. The map provided by Bishop projected a route up the side of the ravine near the bottom where it was still shallow, then up and over a ridge too steep for the crawler. He studied the map from a side profile, seeing several potential trouble spots. Skippy, you will be controlling the combots. Can they make the journey? The Bearcan considered that notion. The 2 regular combots will not have any problem going over that ridge, but the combot carrying the big stealth generator will need help in 2 short sections of the route. You can use cables to winch it up. The only difficulty will be keeping your entire team under the coverage of the portable stealth field. They can't be strung out in a long line. Skippy, Bishop asked. The portable stealth generator needs to go with the ground team. There is no need to bring the big generator with them. Smythe's team had 2 stealth field generators with them, a small unit that covered only his team or a crawler, and a bigger unit that could temporarily envelop the entire moon base. The only problem I see is that if the people walking overland use the portable stealth generator, there won't be a stealth field concealing the crawler. Can the crawler use the big generator? The crawler is carrying the big generator anyway. No, Skippy shouted. Do not turn that big generator on until it is at the moon base. It uses way too much power. The crawler really doesn't need a stealth field, Joe. The last 3 center stations are located above where the crawler can access, so crews do not get out of the crawler unless they need to make repairs to the stations. All 3 of those stations are in perfect working order, so there is no need for me to fake images of 2 Bosphorok getting out and walking around. The two drivers only need to keep the crawler's transmitter turned off and follow the route until you meet them on the other side of the ridge. Good, then. Bishop's voice reflected the strain of being forced to watch and wait while the Star Team carried out the mission. Smythe, I think that takes care of the immediate problem. Understood and agreed. Colonel Bishop, that is an excellent plan, thank you. Smythe chided himself for not utilizing the resources aboard the ship sooner. I hope we have used up our quota of bad luck for today. Team, we are getting out here, except for the drivers. Katie Frey was first to step off the back ramp, and promptly and slowly fell feet first into the dust, sinking toward the bottom until her boots touched. Minerals in the dust and the static charge it held partly blocked the faint signals from the crawler, and the signal strength could not be boosted without being detected by the enemy. Walking was impossible, so she dropped to hands and knees and crawled blindly, feeling her way upward to the side until the antenna atop her helmet was close enough to the surface to receive a signal. "I'm uninjured," she reported, and moments later her helmet rose back into vacuum. "Colonel Smythe," she gently tapped dust off her helmet, "I think people need to get out on their backs or bellies and swim to the sort of shore." Smythe did not like that idea. "Frey, we are sending a cable to you. Anchor it on a rock." One by one, the crew slid off the ramp, pulling themselves hand over hand along the cable until they were all out of the dust pool, except for Smythe. He popped the helmet seals of the two dead Bosphorok and slid them into the dust, watching them disappear much too slowly. Then there was the problem of the three combots. "Skippy, you can get the combots to shore?" "The two weapons carriers, yes. The one with the stealth generator is a problem. It is going to sink like a stone. I can probably control it at the bottom, but we need a backup." "Sir, I can walk back into the dust, get into direct contact with the combat," Frey volunteered. Smythe accepted that Frey was their only dust-walking expert. "Very well. Wait for the bot to settle. Don't go in there unless I give the order." The first two combots leapt athletically from the ramp toward the ravine's side, landing with their sensor crowns above the dust, and Skippy barely needed to guide them splashing out of the dust. The last combot could not be risked with a jump, so it gently stepped off the ramp and sank rapidly. "Wait, wait," Skippy cautioned as Katie set down her rifle, preparing to walk down into the dust over her head. "It's slow, but it's working. I don't want you in that dust unless it becomes absolutely necessary. Your suit's coolant radiators won't work under there, and you could overheat. The dust may clog your radiators. It has already affected your suit's performance." As Smythe stood on the ramp, silently urging the proceedings to move faster, Skippy did his best to move the combat. It stumbled badly several times, coming close to tipping over, until its antenna emerged from the surface, prompting silent cheers from the team. When it carefully walked clear of the dust, Smythe clipped the cable to his belt and ordered the team to pull him away from the crawler. "Right," he declared as he attempted to brush dust off the front of his suit. "Grudzian, Nunnally, get the crawler moving. Team, step away from the dust." It was good that Smythe gave that last order, for the crawler's treads churned up a rooster tail of dust before it lurched forward. Making steady and controlled progress, the drivers slowly increased speed as it climbed the ravine, until Skippy pulled the stealth field back and a true image of the crawler was exposed to the satellites overhead. No alarm was sounded, and the bodies of the two dead Bosphorok remained firmly on the bottom of the ravine, buried under deep dust. Smythe got his team moving, with Skippy outlining the edges of the portable stealth field that protected the marching column from prying eyes. Last to leave the crawler while it was stuck in the dust, Smythe was also last to reboard it at the rendezvous point. The biggest problem his team had encountered along the way was boredom. They reached the rendezvous point 2 hours before the crawler and had absolutely nothing to do until that vehicle rolled close enough for Skippy to extend the stealth field over it once again. Though only 90 minutes remained until they were scheduled to drive the crawler into its garage at the moon base, Smythe ordered the team to take 40-minute power naps and shifts. He knew the elite warriors did not want to miss any action. He also knew they had long since developed an ability to catch sleep whenever they could. Smythe, too, nodded off when it was his turn, being jostled awake much too soon. It was much too soon. The clock in his faceplate showed only 9 minutes passed since he closed his eyes. A soldier was kneeling next to him, gently shaking Smythe's shoulder.
"Sir, we have a problem."
Smythe was instantly and fully awake.
"What is it?"
he asked the people working to assemble the big stealth generator in the cramped confines of the crawler's cabin. "I will not say well heh-heh, since that gets your knickers in a twist," Skippy announced. "However, this is a story you will look back on and laugh at later. If, you know, there is a later for you. It seems that when the Combot fell off the back of the ramp into the dust, we lost part of the big stealth field generator."
Lost?
It was there for sure when the Combot got into the crawler the first time, and it's not there now, so it fell out somewhere along the way. The most likely place we could have lost it is when the Combot was under the dust, because it nearly tipped over several times down there.
You just now noticed it is missing?
I did not notice it is gone. The assembly team noticed. I am aboard the ship, remember? He sighed. You monkeys are so careless with your toys.
Your senses cannot keep track of...
My senses could keep track of even tiny parts, though bandwidth through the micro-wormhole is restricted. The reason I did not keep track of every single nitpicky little detail is that I have a rather short attention span, in case you haven't noticed. Really, this is your fault for relying on an absent-minded beer can to watch your vital equipment. What were you thinking?
Smythe regretted that he could not even hit the beer can with a hammer since the Flying Dutchman was safely far from the moon.
Colonel Smythe, Skippy sighed again. I am disappointed. You should have given me a snappy retort.
I have your retort right here.
Smythe squeezed the stock of his rifle. Why don't you come down here and I'll show it to you?
Thank you, but being down there sounds dangerous, especially around your team, so I will stay right here.
Do you have a suggestion for us?
Let me think. Are there any electronics stores near you?
Frey leaned to the Marine Raider next to her, switching to a private channel.
Why isn't the AI helping us?
The pilot, Captain Reed, told me about Skippy. She was on that last really long mission,
Edward Burke explained.
I think that is Skippy helping.
Heaven help us.
After several totally unhelpful suggestions from the beer can, a three-way conversation ensued between Smythe, Skippy, and Bishop, with the star team listening intently. In Katie's opinion, Skippy was not even trying to help.
Skippy, Bishop was clearly frustrated. There must be something we can do. Something I can do, you mean. You monkeys can't even...
What is this dingus we lost? What does it do?
It's a power regulator, as if that means anything to you.
All it does is control the power flow?
Bishop's tone was, Frey thought, condescending. Can't you handle that function?
Through the micro-wormhole.
No, dum-dum, of course not. Plus, you know what happens when I try to regulate even my own power flow. I am not good at it. My awesomeness would burn out the generator.
Skippy,
Smythe sought to bring focus back to the discussion.
Is there something else here you can use to regulate the missing component?
No, I am sorry. I already considered that.
The AI was much more respectful of the SAS man.
There are power regulators in your suits, in the Combots, and in the crawler. None of them are capable of being useful in the stealth field generator.
I'm very sorry about this. Joe should have requested that we bring along a spare power regulator.
Frey expected Colonel Bishop to react to the insult, because that is what she had witnessed the ship's captain do before, and because any normal person would react to being blamed. Instead, Bishop laughed softly.
I did request you bring a spare, you little shithead.
No, you didn't, dum-dum. You...
Oh, wait. Skippy hesitated. I have learned not to argue with one of your wacky statements. What truly bizarre idea are you considering this?
The away team has two stealth field generators, right?
Bishop interrupted, which Katie thought was bad manners, but seemed to be the way guys talked.
Can we use the power regulator from the portable stealth unit in the big unit?
I suppose we could do that, Skippy responded slowly.
Perhaps you have not been keeping up on current events, Joe, so I will break it down Barney style for you. We are using the portable stealth field now.
I know that, you silicon moron. The team is now on the road to the base with no stops along the way. Is a stealth field really necessary before the crawler gets to the base?
If absolutely nothing goes wrong, then no. But the universe seems to have a hard-on for screwing up this operation today, so you should not count on nothing else going wrong, Joe.
Colonel Bishop, Smythe asked. I recommend we go with your idea.
Smythe, I appreciate your support, but if this is an in-for-a-penny, in-for-a-pound thing, then we need to consider alternatives.
There is no alternative, sir. We are fully committed now. The crawler is too close to the base for us to get out here.
That is not quite true, Smythe. I've been thinking about that subject. You could stop the crawler, get out, and walk backwards along the track using the portable stealth unit to conceal yourselves. To buy time, Skippy could report the crawler broke down. The base would send out another crawler, and we would need to explode your crawler before the repair team arrived, but you would have a chance to get somewhere the Falcon could pick you up.
Pardon me, sir, but that is poppycock, Smythe insisted. We did not come out here to save ourselves. We have a mission to perform. Skippy, is there any other place we could possibly get a Maxalt dropship?
Not that I know of, and as you know, I know pretty much everything.
The beer can did not add his usual smugness to the remark.
Colonel, Smythe concluded, my team is in position and ready. We are not likely to get another opportunity. Request permission to proceed.
Who dares wins, Smythe?
Daring acts are the only hope we have left, sir.
You're the commander on the scene, Bishop said with a wistful sigh.
I'm not going to second-guess you.
Good luck, Colonel Smythe. Bishop out.
Smythe knew the commander did not need to say Bishop out. He had done that to assure the SAS man that no one was looking over his shoulder. Having somewhat unexpectedly gotten the freedom of action he requested, Jeremy Smythe did not know exactly what to do next.
Right, he said as a filler while he thought.
Skippy, can you remove the power regulator from the portable unit, or do you need us to assist?
A combat can do most of the task, however I will need humans for the delicate work. I will let you know when I need you.
One of the combats activated, moving carefully in the cramped crawler cabin.
Now, Smythe turned to address his team, who were looking rather shell-shocked, and the fighting had not yet begun.
If anyone knows how we could screw this up even worse than we have already, please let me know.
That remark drew a couple tight grins.
That was not a joke, he scowled. I want to know of anything we may have forgotten that could trip us up.
That's it, Skippy announced with rather less enthusiasm than Smythe desired. The power regulator is attached to the big stealth unit, and Phase 1 testing is complete and successful.
How many testing phases are there?
Well, three. The inspection of individual components is Phase 1. 2 is the initial power-up, and as you might have guessed, Phase 3 is activation.
When can you perform the remaining tests?
Well, I can't do that until we are inside the crawler garage.
You idiot beer can. We won't know if the bloody thing works until we need it?
Unfortunately, yes, it is kind of a sticky situation, because if it fails at that point, we will not have time to fix it before the entire base security team arrives to blast your team into tiny pieces.
Wait! The AI implored.
This is a rare case when I am totally not screwing with you monkeys. To test the regulator requires sending power through the system, and the initial power feed causes a spike the moon base would detect. Even I can't completely mask the effect. I would only make it worse if I tried to suppress the power spike.
Smythe mentally ran through a list of curse words and decided none of his inventory was sufficient for the occasion.
Go on, please.
If Skippy was disappointed that he hadn't provoked a reaction, he kept it to himself.
There is no reason to expect the new power regulator will not work properly. However, that component has never been used on such a large stealth generator, so I will not know for certain that it will function properly. The real test is when we activate the stealth field at max power. If the regulator is going to fail, that's when the trouble will bite you in the ass. I did warn Joe that covering the entire base with one stealth generator is a big strain on the unit you were able to bring. I mean, to make the generator small and light enough so your team could transport it, I had to remove a lot of redundant systems and slap the thing together with duct tape. Don't worry, it should work.
I think.
Never done this before, you understand.
Smythe's fists clenched in the powered gloves.
When I asked if anyone could think how we could possibly screw this up any worse...
Hey, it's not my fault. I warned you against this whole lunatic scheme. Besides, a possibly malfunctioning stealth field is not your biggest problem right now.
It's not?
Nope, not even close. I just learned that when you arrived at the crawler garage, the chief engineer will be there to inspect the crawler for any damage, and the officer in charge of the two knuckleheads who are supposed to be driving this thing will also be there to greet them and probably yell at them again. As a further bit of bad luck, the delays we encountered will have us arriving just before two other crawlers are scheduled to leave the garage. All this means the garage section of the base will have a lot more people than normal, like Normally, the garage only has 2 people on staff. Now I expect 12 or more.
Smythe was not overly concerned about the latest change of plans. Additional crawler crews and mechanics in the garage section of the base would not pose a significant risk to his team, and, he considered, it might actually be quite convenient to have so many of the moon base personnel in one location. None of the Bosphorak there were likely to be armed or wearing any kind of armor protection. They would only be additional soft targets for his heavily armed and armor-suited team. Taking out a large number of opposition early would save the Star Team from having to track them down in isolated nooks and crannies of the base later.
More people in the garage area will not be a problem. We will need to take them out immediately before we can go through those pressure doors and up 2 levels to where we need to plug you into the base computer.
Yeah, well, this is kind of ironic.
Oh, bloody hell, Smythe groaned.
The base has been having issues with blown circuits, so the commander has recently ordered that entire wing to power down until the problem can be fixed. The garage on the end of the wing has its own power source, but the original point where you were supposed to plug in my access device no longer has a connection to the main computer.
Show me a schematic, Smythe asked, weariness evident in his voice. Where can we plug this thing in?
The closest point is here. An icon began blinking in Smythe's faceplate.
No good, the SAS commando shook his head. Getting there will require cutting through or blowing 2 sets of blast doors.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Okay, the closest other option is way over in the wing to the right of the crawler garage. Problem is, getting there requires going halfway to the base core, then back out.
No, Smythe observed after a moment of careful study. It does not.
It doesn't? Skippy was puzzled. Are you reading the map properly?
I am. It looks to me like we could cross the ground between the wings and go in, probably through this airlock. Oh, that is risky. This whole bloody op is risky.
Smythe walked forward, stepping between people sitting on the deck, to look out through the front windscreen, if it could be called that on an airless world. The crawler garage was no more than 2 kilometers away, a fact he could have determined in his helmet faceplate's display. Somehow, seeing the closeness of the base made the situation more real to him. Whatever the team was going to do, they needed to act quickly. Time. He needed more time.
Skippy, we are going to slow down.
He tapped Grudzian on the shoulder and the man nodded.
Tell the base the crawler treads are experiencing a malfunction. Tell them whatever you like, but do not make the problem serious enough that the duty officer sends another crawler out to meet us. Understood?
The crawler slowed as the 2 drivers pulled back on the throttles, making Smythe stutter step and hold on to the cockpit bulkhead. To sell the ruse of a partial tread malfunction, the drivers had the crawler surge and lurch forward, making a rough ride for the occupants.
Understood what I am supposed to do, Skippy was peeved. I do not understand why.
I need more time to consider how to get a team across the gap to the other wing where we need to plug you in, Smythe explained.
Oh, gotcha. Okay, the duty officer is unhappy. He really hates those 2 dead guys. Maybe we did them a favor by killing them quickly. I'm telling him the crawler can make it back to the garage. We are moving slowly to prevent causing further damage.
While Smythe examined a schematic of the base, Frey leaned toward Captain Poole, touching helmets.
Captain, Skippy is talking to the Bosphorak. I read something in the briefing material that he is unable to speak with species capable of interstellar flight.
Lauren, taken aback by the unexpected question, turned to look in the other woman's faceplate.
Skippy talks to higher species frequently, but they don't know they are talking with an elder AI. Right now, the base duty officer thinks he is speaking with the 2 crawler drivers we took out. The restriction on Skippy is that he can't reveal himself to starfaring species. If he is translating for us, or like now, he is pretending to be someone else, his programming doesn't interfere. Ah, sorry, I didn't understand. It's okay. Better to ask than not know. The new improved Skippy, you know what happened to us in the Roach Motel.
Frey nodded, so Poole continued.
He's been able to release or get around some of the original restrictions, like now he can explain some higher technology with us. Physics concepts, advanced math, that sort of thing. We hope...
Poole, Smythe called, summoning the ranger with a gesture.
Lauren pushed herself away from the crawler cabin's wall and walked the 5 steps forward to confer with the team commander, grateful for the suit's stabilizers keeping her upright.
The drivers might have been overselling the supposedly malfunctioning treads, for with every full revolution of the treads, the crawler lurched.
Sir?
Smythe didn't waste words.
There has been another change of plans. You will be leading the team to take the weapons control center.